Happy Chris Towers Day, everybody. It is Thursday, March 24th, and we are bringing on Chris Towers, a member of our fantasy team here, fantasy basketball expert. You can hear him on the Daily Fantasy Live podcast. Hey, Chris, what's going on?
Hey, Adam, don't oversell it here.
I'm not.
We don't want to get expectations too high. If there's one thing my life has proven, is that the higher expectations go, the more disappointment will follow.
I believe that cannot be true. But you know Chris, if you've listened to our podcast before, because he was on a lot last year, and for some reason, I just haven't gotten him on. I feel really bad, but today is Chris Towers Day, along with Scott White. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Adam.
Hey,
Chris does a lot of basketball.
Chris does a lot.
Not quite over yet, but it's getting there. You're going to hear Chris more and more, I think.
It's pretty close to over at this point. Yeah, we're at the championship portion of the fantasy season, so you know,
good.
There's not much left to write about, Scott. You know how it goes with baseball. Once we get to that point in the season,
once we get to that point in the season in baseball, it's football season.
Yes,
and nobody cares about baseball anymore.
I still care about baseball. I am doing a draft right now. How cool is that? It's an untimed draft. It's probably going to take about a week. But there's a good chance I'll be making a pick while we're on the air. I also have a draft tonight at 9 o'clock. It's a keeper draft, my first keeper league. Very excited about that. But, boy, do I dislike my team that I drafted yesterday in our roto draft with you guys. And I will talk about it in a second. But I have to remind everybody that you can make new picks if your bracket is busted on CBSSports.com/brackets. We have an app, a great CBS Sports app that you need to download as well. You can make your picks on the app, but we have a cool game where, look, you're not doomed if you had Michigan State winning it all. You can make new picks every single round, and you can win prizes, including a trip to next year's Final Four. So go to cbssports.com/brackets for that. So today we'll talk about the roto draft that we did yesterday, some lessons we learned. We'll also go through injuries, Troy Tulowitzki getting hit by a pitch, Michael Conforto back stiffness. Tyler Naquin homered twice for Cleveland. The guy we talked about yesterday could be their starting center fielder, and we have more updates for you. But what did you guys think of our 12-team rotisserie draft? Five outfielders. You guys know the format, not you, but everybody out there. Nine pitchers to be divvied up however you want. 5x5 categories. How did it go for you guys? I hope it went better than it went for me.
I feel pretty good about my team. I didn't get two of the top. Well, I have it as 17 elite pitchers, and I usually aim for two. I didn't get two. I didn't get any. But I did get both Syndergaard and Hamels in the fifth and sixth round, which are just outside that top 17. So I can live with that. This was one of the first drafts, I think, where I got to draft 11th or 12th. And that, to me, is the sweet spot, particularly in a rotisserie league where you know there's not going to be these stray pitchers thrown into the first round that are kind of going to mess up the sequence of things. I think there are 14 first round caliber players. So if you can't get that third pick where you get whichever of Goldschmidt, Trout, and Harper falls, you want 11th or 12th so that you get two of what I consider to be first round talents. In my case, it was Manny Machado and Jose Altuve in the 12th spot.
Now, that did guarantee you that you weren't going to get an elite first baseman. You have Albert Pujols. Chris, you seem to always, I feel like every time we mock, and this was a real draft, you seem to always end up with Byung-Ho Park as your first baseman. Am I wrong about that?
No, it seems to have happened, I think, two of the last three drafts, and that may just be because I wrote a blog post about him about 2 weeks ago and just talked myself into waiting on him. And it usually turns out that I just... When I look at the draft and I see, you know, the clusters of first basemen, I'm always like, why take one of them if there's six of them and, you know, try to wait for that sixth one, you know, if I think they're all kind of in the same group. And then it turns out that I can't get one of the six, so I just wait. It ends up being a situation where I'm just kind of forced to wait. And I think the problem with my team yesterday, I'm going to finish in last place in batting average, and that's going to be really difficult to overcome. I'm going to have to make some adjustments on the fly with this team.
I got to be honest with you. When I draft in a roto league, I hardly ever look at batting average. I mean, I almost don't even consider it.
That's a problem, Adam.
Well, look, if I knew I was drafting Chris Davis and several other guys who were like 230 or 250 hitters, then I would start considering it. But that's usually not the case. I mean, I don't usually draft a team that I know is going to be bad in batting average. But actually, looking at my team right now, I think I actually might be pretty bad in batting average. I didn't even really consider it, but I do find it to be the most unpredictable stat by far. So you never know what's going to happen.
It is, and it doesn't have a natural paired stat in a standard 5x5. You know, runs and stolen bases kind of go together. Home runs and RBI kind of do. But everything you say about batting average is true. So I do think it takes a backseat to some of those other categories. But another truth about batting average is it's probably the hardest category to make up ground in late. If you're targeting a batting average guy late, that's probably the only thing he does. And you don't want that kind of player to be stuck with that kind of player in your lineup all year. Like Markakis type.
Yeah. So how about we go through the first three or four rounds? And the results will be on the website, right? Or no?
Yes, they will.
Okay, so you can check out these results on the website.
A little later. Maybe tomorrow.
Okay, cool. Al had the ninth pick. All right, we'll do it in order. Heath had the second pick. I had the seventh pick. I don't really like picking in the middle. Al had the ninth pick. Chris had the 10th pick, and Scott had the 12th pick. So, without any further ado, terrible pick to start the draft with Bryce Harper, number one.
Just a disaster.
Mike Trout, 2. Paul Goldschmidt, 3. Clayton Kershaw, 4. And I really wanted Donaldson, and I had the 7th pick, and I didn't think I was going to get him. But I did, because Stanton went 5th, Correa went 6th, and I took Josh Donaldson, 7th.
A little backstory behind that. Matthew Coca picked 5th. That would normally be the right spot for Donaldson, I think. But he also picked 5th in yesterday's head-to-head draft, and he decided he just didn't want to have to start two of his teams with the same player in case, I guess, Donaldson fell off a cliff. I think Donaldson is so safe that you kind of want to start with him in every team if you can, but that was his decision, and so he got Stanton instead.
Okay, and then Carlos
decidedly not safe.
Yes.
Carlos Correa went 6th, and then I took Josh Donaldson. Andrew McCutchen went 8th. Al Melchior took Miguel Cabrera. Chris took Nolan Arenado. Then Anthony Rizzo went off the board, and Scott took Manny Machado to end the first round. Pretty standard first round, right? No, nothing really.
Yeah, the order in the middle is a little out of whack, but other than that, it's pretty much how you expect most of your first rounds to go.
And then in the second round, Jose Altuve goes to Scott, followed by AJ Pollock. We talked about in the head-to-head points league, Scott got AJ Pollock with the 9th pick of the second round 2 days ago. Yesterday in this Roto League, Pollock goes with the 2nd pick of the second round. And then, Chris, you took Jose Bautista. Why don't you tell us why you took Arenado in the first round. Tell us what you were thinking in the second round when you took Jose Bautista.
I almost never take a starting pitcher with my first, I would say, at least 2 picks, usually my first 3 picks. I think there's too many of them. There's too much randomness that goes into starting pitcher rankings at the end of the season that it's not that worth, unless you get Kershaw, and even that, it's difficult to justify that pick for me. I thought the next best player might have been Chris Bryant, and I already had Arenado. I'm not going to take my corner infielder and my third baseman with my first 2 picks, so Jose Bautista was the best player available for me.
I do kind of feel like I've neglected Chris Bryant just a little bit. How does he compare with those top 3 third basemen, fellas, in your mind, with Donaldson, Arenado, and Machado? And then you have Chris Bryant, who's a solid 4th in our rankings, but, you know, is he really, like, neck and neck with those other 3?
I think he's a clear step back. I think by ranking him 4th, you're already presuming some growth there, because we've referred to several times Bryant was actually worse than Michael Franco in head-to-head points per game last year, and actually the same is true for Matt Carpenter. He was worse than Carpenter, and I know this isn't head-to-head points.
Right, and that's a distinction, though, because strikeouts are bringing that down, right?
Right, but the point is the complete package that he delivered last year wasn't all that. It was encouraging. It was good as it is, but it wasn't elite yet. So I think he's typically overdrafted. I like him as like an early third rounder. Pretty much never lasts until then, but I think that would be the most appropriate spot to take him.
Well, Chris, you obviously feel differently if you thought Chris Bryant was worthy of a, you know, early to mid second round pick.
Yeah, and looking at like the Michael Franco outperforming him on a per game basis last season, I would say that Michael Franco came closer to maximizing his current talent level as a rookie than Chris Bryant.
I would agree with that.
Like, you look at, I actually wrote about Chris Bryant yesterday, so he's on the brain for me. And I wrote about him as someone who I think is among the group of players that, if everything goes right, could be in that like top three conversation. I think he's that kind of talent. I know the strikeout rate is alarming, but you're looking at a guy who was 7th in the major, or 14th in the majors in hard hit rate last season as a rookie. That's really impressive, and that speaks to the raw power that he has and the ability that he has to manifest that raw power in game at such a young age. He's 23 years old, and that's a rate that improved as the season went on. If you look at his month-by-month splits on FanGraphs, he was hitting the ball consistently harder as he went on. But his home run to fly ball ratio didn't quite reflect that yet. He was 15.8% of his fly balls went over the park. That's an okay rate. That's pretty good. I think it was like 37th in the majors last season. Mm. But you look at that, you project that room for him to grow as a power hitter. I think we think he has 45 homer potential.
Yeah, sure.
Like, if he put together a 2015 Josh Donaldson season this season, given the lineup he plays in, would that surprise you?
No, it wouldn't.
And so that's when I look at the guys that you're picking around him. You know, you've got, you know, Votto, Posey, Betts, Springer. I think he's got more upside than any of those guys, maybe except Posey. I don't know.
But if he doesn't take that step forward, if he just repeats last year's numbers.
I think he's a safe mid-second rounder.
Yeah.
Like, okay. You're not going to feel disappointed if he gives you just last season again. And there is risk involved with Chris Bryant because of the strikeout rate. There's what I was talking about with you guys in the office yesterday was the best and worst case scenarios for Chris Bryant might be like 2014 Chris Davis and 2015 Chris Davis.
Well, except Bryant also stole 13 bases in 17 attempts.
Yeah, he might have like 20 steal upside.
Okay, let's move on. So again, to round two, it's Altuve, Pollock, Bautista, the first three picks. Then Max Scherzer goes to Al. Chris Bryant goes next. And then I had an interesting pick. I was, so I went with Josh Donaldson in the first round. And obviously, if you've been listening, you know I want an elite first baseman and an elite outfielder. So here I am in the middle of round two thinking I can't get both, most likely. Oh, so yeah. What's that? Go ahead, Scott.
No, this is surprising because there were two elite first basemen. You could make the case there were three elite first basemen, depending which side you put Chris Davis on.
Yeah, I consider him a roto to be fine. I think he's more of a third round pick. I don't want to take him in the second round. I took Springer, and it was either Springer or Edwin Encarnacion, and I felt there was a better chance of me getting a first baseman in the third round than an outfielder that I wanted. I felt there was a pretty slim chance of either happening, and neither happened. But I took Springer. I think I just really wanted George Springer.
I think you did too.
Yeah, you know, I'm okay reaching for guys that I really love, and I don't consider it that much of a reach. Do you? It's sixth pick of the second round.
Well, I just think the spot we most often see him go is middle of the third round.
Springer,
which is where you were picking in the third round. You may have missed him by a couple picks.
I think I would have missed him.
But I think if you were aiming to be as well fortified across the board as you could be, you would have taken Votto, or I guess you preferred Encarnacion with that mid second round pick, and then hope for Springer in the third.
That's the one thing, man. One more pick in the third round, and
it almost worked out. It almost worked out.
I swear to you, man. I cursed, you know, at home by myself. I cursed at Sergio, who was picking before me three times in the draft, because he totally screwed me and took the guy that I wanted. And one was Edwin Encarnacion in the third round. And this is the thing. The Edwin Encarnacion oblique injury is probably not a big deal, but it was enough for me to avoid him in the second round.
Look, that's an injury for baseball players that really can mess things up. We've seen whole seasons get derailed for guys with that. And it's an injury that can tend to linger longer than you might think, given like initial reports.
All right. So moving on here. Buster Posey is next. Joey Votto, Mookie Betts, Jose Abreu, Chris Sale, the third pitcher off the board to Heath, and then D. Gordon to finish out round two. Any thoughts on the back end here? Posey, Votto, Mookie Betts, Jose Abreu, Chris Sale, D. Gordon.
Most of the names are pretty typical. I think D. Gordon went a few spots later than usual in Roto. I might have taken him over Betts just because steals are going to be so scarce later on. You know, it's interesting. Heath took Chris Sale with the 11th pick. Even though he's like you, Adam, he wants to make sure he gets one of the elite first basemen, but he saw both Encarnacion and Chris Davis still on the board and figured Igor with the 12th pick wasn't going to take both, so he went ahead and took his preferred pitcher in Sale.
Is Chris Sale being underdrafted?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. I was actually going to follow up with, you know, even though a lot of times it does make sense if you're near the end of a round to look at what the other guy's going to do and determine which order you pick the two players you want based on that. But in a league with a corner infield spot and a DH spot and two first basemen falling farther than we're used to seeing, I don't know that I would have gambled in Heath's position because I don't think Chris Sale is enough better than the rest of the starting pitchers to have taken that chance.
I guess my question is you have Max Scherzer going 7 or 8 spots ahead of him. Is Max Scherzer better than Chris Sale?
Yes.
I think so too.
I'm not sure I agree with
that. Well, let me just look. Sale 2 years ago had a 2.17 ERA. Mm-hmm. And he's obviously capable of doing, I don't know about that, but 2.50 ERA. But three of his last four seasons, his ERA is over 3. 3.05, 3.07, and last year 3.41. And honestly, like 3.05, 3.07, that doesn't sound bad or anything like that, but you're not going to be a top 5 pitcher with an ERA over 3. There's going to be guys who have 2.50 ERAs, 2.45. You know what I mean? Like it's not great.
His peripherals indicated in 2013 and 2014 that, or 2012 and 2013, that he was a low threes ERA pitch.
That low threes then, is not good enough to be the number three pitcher off the board.
I was going to finish my sentence.
I finished it for you.
In 2014, his FIP is lowered dramatically and his ERA goes down. And then in 2015, his ERA goes back up, but his FIP and XFIP are way down again in the mid twos. He's a different pitcher than the guy in 2012 and 13 that posted those low threes ERA.
But how do you justify taking him over Jake Arrieta?
I don't know if I can, but I think that might just mean that Jake Arrieta is being underdrafted. I think Jake Arrieta is, you look at the risk because he's only got the season and a half track record of truly elite production. But I guess my biggest thing is I don't think Max Scherzer's that much better than either Sale or Arrieta. And that's why I never draft pitchers early.
I would agree with Arrieta, but Sale, I mean, the strikeout rate's comparable. What Scherzer and presumably Arrieta have on him is 20 innings of it. 20 innings of those same great ratios that Sale's never achieved.
Yeah.
Well, Arrieta's done it once.
Right.
Let's not give him too much credit. Chris Sale did 214 innings in 2013, 208 last year. If he gets one extra start and, you know, on a per start basis, he actually wasn't. It's not like he was getting yanked early last season. He just only got 31 starts. If he gets 33 starts, you're all of a sudden looking at 221 innings and nobody's complaining. But he's one of the, I think, maybe three pitchers in baseball that could realistically strike out 300 batters in an inning right now. Or 300 batters in a season.
He's awesome. He's awesome. And Arrieta went 2 picks later.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's go to the round 3 then. Arrieta, Chris Davis, to Heath. Heath, by the way, I think had a really solid draft. Bumgarner, JD Martinez. Is that too early for JD Martinez, 4 picks in a round 3?
That is a tricky spot. If you really want a hitter, well, the fact that Encarnacion's still out there means you should have taken Encarnacion. Yeah. But if you really want a hitter in the middle of round 3, JD Martinez is probably among the best you're going to find, but that's usually why I'm probably going to take a pitcher in round 3. Go ahead and take my first ace then and see which of that same tier of outfielders gets back to me.
I do wonder, at what point do we stop being skeptical of him?
I'm not skeptical of Martinez. I just think he's a little south of elite.
Okay.
I guess. And there's, you know, the pitchers going in at this point are clearly elite.
And that's why I don't think I would have gotten George Springer in the middle of round three, seeing Martinez go there. But anyway, Jacob deGrom goes after Martinez, Edwin Encarnacion, and then I took Charlie Blackmon. Corey Kluber was the next pick. Nelson Cruz to Al, David Price to Chris, and Adam Jones, and Troy Tulowitzki to Scott. Scott with an interesting 3-4, and we'll actually stop it here and talk about our teams and some lessons learned and whatnot, but Troy Tulowitzki, Ryan Braun. I feel like that's earlier than you wanted to go for Braun, which is part of the, you know, the challenge of picking at the ends. But also, you got some injury risk there with your 3-4 picks in Tulo and Braun.
Yeah, I did. I did.
Look, hand injuries aren't a big deal in baseball.
Well, Troy Tulowitzki got hit in the hand. It's a bruise. It's not a break.
And it happened after you picked him.
It did happen after. It wouldn't have changed my opinion. It's not a big deal. But obviously the track record of injury is a big deal. I just think, I don't know. Late third round.
No, look, I got Tulo's, Tulo's fine, Scott. It's the combo of Tulo Braun. I'm wondering if you're a little nervous, you know?
I'm a little nervous. I would have rather it been like Tulo and Adam Jones or Tulo and JD Martinez, but, Braun has gotten back in to the swing of things this spring after sitting a lot early because of the back surgery, the recovery from back surgery. And one advantage he has over those others I named is that he stole 24 bases, I think, last year. So he's going to help in that category where, I'd rather not have to draft a specialist and take the hit in the other categories. I do wish I could have. I like the picks individually, I guess, but what you're saying about the combo of risk there, yeah, it's not ideal.
I mean, even throwing Manny Machado having had, you know, two knee surgeries, it's a risky core, but the upside's big.
Okay. I want to talk about just overall lessons that we learned, things that can help our listeners here. First thing, I'll just reel off some of my thoughts. I think you should queue up a lot of guys. I mean, your queue is very important, but queue up your starting pitchers, the ones that you think are aces, ones that you think want to have two of them. We always say that you want two aces, whether that's 20 or 17, however many. Queue up all those guys, and as they go off the board, you figure out when you have to start taking them. I took hitters with my first three picks, Josh Donaldson, George Springer, Charlie Blackmon, and in rounds 4 and 5, I ended up with Matt Harvey and Carlos Carrasco. So my first five picks, I was very happy with that. That worked out well. So with starting pitchers, I recommend doing that. And also with closers, especially in a league where not everybody's going to have as many closers as they want, queue up the ones that you want and think about how many. If you want two or three, I always want three in this roto format. And once they start going off the board, you know that you need to start making your move. One guy I drafted, Addison Russell, very helpful that he can be a second baseman or a shortstop. It allows you to wait until pretty late in the draft, and then you can draft either the best available second baseman or the best available shortstop and move Addison Russell, or if you go even later, Starlin Castro with the same eligibility to a different position. Speaking of closers, I hate the closers. I find I just don't really like the crop. I talked about this when we did the preview. I'm not a guy. I did take Rosenthal, but I'm not a guy who goes for, you know, elite closers very often. And I find there to be just so much risk. Guys that could lose their job, and then, you know, in terms of the Brewers and the Reds and the Braves and the Rockies, I just don't want anything to do with closers on bad teams. I don't think they do enough for you. What do you guys think? Well, I'll let Chris talk, because I know Scott doesn't quite agree with what I'm saying. Chris, how do you feel about the closer crop this year?
I don't necessarily... If you've got your job locked up and you're good, I don't really care what team you're on, because we see closers on bad teams. Like, we'll see closers on bad teams not get many save opportunities, and that's really frustrating. But there's always a handful of guys every year that are among the lead leaders in saves, even though they're on bad teams. Because, you know, they're going to win. The worst team in baseball is going to win, what, 25 fewer games than the best team? Probably maybe closer to 30. So you're talking about maybe 30 fewer save opportunities. But those good teams are going to have more blowout wins as well. So you're not.
I see much more of a correlation between good teams and saves and bad teams and saves. And if you look at those closer situations, they're not even settled right now. Like, we don't know who these closers are and these bad teams.
That would be the biggest thing. But I'm talking about like a Like, I think the Marlins are going to be pretty bad this year, but I have no problem taking AJ Ramos.
I don't either.
I think he's a really good pitcher. And so that's what I'm concerned with first and foremost is, you know, if Kenley Jansen was on the Phillies, I would still take him.
You'd take him, but he wouldn't be nearly as excited.
I still think he would be an elite closer.
Oh, no. God, no. An elite closer? There's never an elite closer on a bad team.
Because bad teams usually don't have elite closers. Like, they usually don't have Kenley Jansen's because they, like, they, that's why you trade
Ken
Giles.
I bet you if Ken Giles, well, you know, it'd be interesting if you had combined, like, all of the Ken Giles, Jonathan Papelbon stats when they were on the Phillies last year, but I'd be, all right. I don't want to belabor it too much. I think I'm fine with one of them being my closers, being a closer on my team out of three, but I don't want any more than that. And I keep taking Freddie Freeman, guys, as a fallback option at first base. I find myself drafting him a lot.
And yeah, I've noticed that too.
I like him.
So he's your clear preference over Adrian Gonzalez and
Hosmer.
Eric Hosmer.
Yes.
And I'm throwing Pujols in that mix now too. He's been fine returning from foot surgery this spring, and he was better than all three of those guys last year. So that I think, you know, obviously the age is a concern, and in this format you're going to have to compensate for the batting average probably, but I think he's undervalued overall.
Well, who's your favorite in that group then? The Freeman, Gonzalez, Hosmer, Pujols?
Well, I rank Pujols last. I'd be most likely to take him though a little later than those others. My favorite's probably Freeman, like you, because he's going to help in batting average and probably not trail Gonzalez by too much in home runs.
Okay, so how about you, Chris? What did you learn from this exercise? What can you tell our listeners that will help them?
I think I've noticed when I focus on my second base, third base, and shortstop positions and wait on first base, I tend to like my teams more. But that cliff at those other positions, like if you can get really good players at those three kind of less, starry positions and wait at first base, I feel like there are probably going to, it's probably easier to fill that hole at first base than it is in those other positions. I tend to like my teams more when I focus on that strategy.
And you certainly did. You have Rendon, Arenado, and Corey Seager in your infield with Byung-ho Park at first base.
Yeah, look, I would feel a lot better about my team if I had someone that I know is a major league caliber player playing first base, because that's a really important position. And if you're behind the eight ball on that, it can be difficult to make up that gap in home runs and RBI.
Yeah, that's what I worry about. And that's kind of the opposite stance that we've been taking. Certainly I've been taking,
yeah,
where, you know, first base appears to be scarcer because there are so many, you know, tip top level players, but then the second tier is very thin.
And so you
settle for somebody like Byung-ho Park, who might be a complete disaster. I actually like you lump second base in with third base and shortstop and talking about the cliff at the position. That's actually the position where I like to wait, because the only real standout I see is Altuve.
Mm-hmm.
And then in this format, maybe D. Gordon as well. But then, you know, I'm sure people who've been listening consistently have heard me say this a bunch of times, but somebody like Joe Panic isn't significantly worse than somebody like Jason Kipnis to me. They're basically in the same tier, or even somebody like Logan Forsythe in this format with the power there.
Yeah.
It just seems like second base is the position where I'm most satisfied to wait.
Yeah, for me, it's like Anthony Rendon in the sixth round. If he gets back, if he just gets back to 2014, I am thrilled what my team looks like. And so, you know, I don't think he's, I would never draft him in the fourth round.
Yeah.
But where I can get him, he's someone that I end up getting quite a bit. And I think he's, you know, a guy who has second round potential.
I like your team, Chris. Lucroy and Wilson Ramos. We actually have an email about Wilson Ramos. I'm just going to read it right now. It's from Kyle. It says, "Dear James, Slippin' Jimmy, and Saul." Chris, you watching Better Call Saul or what?
I am apparently the only person in America who never watched Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul.
Yeah, you really are. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't know that. Well, anyway, Kyle says, Wilson Ramos had LASIK eye surgery at the beginning of spring training and has quietly been having a great preseason since the surgery. I haven't heard you talk about Wilson Ramos much. Do you think he can be more productive? And will you move Ramos up your rankings because of the surgery? If so, how far?
I might have to do that a little. I had liked Ramos as like a fallback catcher in the past, and then last year happened, and yeah. He hit 229, and he'd always had poor plate discipline. So, you know, I kind of just interpreted as, okay, well, that was fun while it lasted. But, you know, then this eye surgery happens, and okay, I could see why that would cause his strikeout rate to kind of spike like it did last year and the batting average to plummet. And yeah, he has had a good spring. So I could see something to that. He's always had above average power for a catcher. So I think he's now in that discussion as kind of that 12th guy at the position, you know, in a one catcher league, the guy you wait until the last round to take if you're just holding out there, not wanting to reach when you don't have to. And in a two catcher league, somebody who could potentially give you Salvador Perez like numbers at a much lower cost.
Well, I'll tell you, the pick that I really admired was a pretty late pick. I'll see what round it was, from Heath Cummings, and he took Nick Hundley with the second to last pick of the 18th round. And I've mentioned this several times. Nick Hundley missed about the final month of the season with a neck injury, and he still finished as the number 7 catcher in Roto leagues, number 13 in points. He hit 355, 393, 563 at home. Was terrible on the road, but it doesn't really matter. I think
he's a pretty good fallback option because he plays half his games in Colorado and has shown that makes a difference for him. But I can't really get excited about him because I think Tommy Murphy's going to be, or I guess it's Tom Murphy. Depends where you look,
I guess. You gotta be formal.
Thomas Murphy.
Thomas.
I expect him to be the Rockies catcher before season's end.
Okay. Well, then I guess I'm not as envious anymore. Second, number 2 catcher. Man, I don't want to be stuck with one of those awful ones.
Yeah, that was a situation where I wanted Real Muto. I had him in my queue and he went, and so I just had to settle for Wilson Ramos. 4 rounds later, it was either Ramos or Derek Norris for me. I kind of grouped those two together.
Did Scott take Real Muto? Scott, did you do that?
No, I didn't.
Tobin did.
Oh.
Yeah, right before my pick.
Man, these Roto leagues are tough. You got so many positions to fill. And you might be looking at, like, there's good pitchers on the board, there's closers on the board, there's somebody you want to take, but you have to fill your catcher spots, or your middle. It's, like, so annoying. You know, I really enjoy it. I love the format. But it's very stressful on draft day. Because there are just so many obligations that you have on your team, so many players that you have to start. It's very challenging.
That's why less and less, and particularly in this format this year, where, you know, first baseman has kind of gotten pulled down a little in terms of depth, shortstop's kind of moved up in depth, I almost don't even care about position scarcity, because you're going to be weak somewhere. You know, there's so many hitter spots to fill.
Yeah.
I just, if you get 3 outfielders early, okay, you still have 2 outfield spots to fill. You know, it's not like you have to worry too much about blocking yourself anywhere. So I don't worry about position scarcity too much in a roto draft.
Right. And I did take 3 outfielders early. I think I took 3 in the, well, 2 in the first 3 picks. And I think I took Puig in the 7th round. And I was fine with that.
The one thing I do in these roto leagues, because they're so deep, is once we get to that reserve round draft, I'm not taking any safe thing, any safe bet. I'm just going for all upside and hoping that of the, 7 guys that we pick in the reserve draft, 2 of them become starters for me.
Right.
That's all I'm hoping. I'm not going to take one of the, there's just so many guys that are just the same.
Who'd you take, Chris?
Well, some of the upside guy, I got Trey Turner. I got Hector Olivera. I don't believe in Hector Olivera. I think he's a myth. I don't believe that this Hector Olivera that has huge upside exists. We haven't seen any evidence of it, but people believe in the skill set, so why not take a risk on him late? I got guys like Tyler Glasnow, Andrew Haney, Alex Wood, Adam Conley, James Paxton in the reserve draft, guys that you know, one or two things go right for them. They've shown some of those, skill sets, especially the guys that have been in the majors. You know, the Marlins have been talking up Adam Conley all spring. He's been hitting 97 on the radar gun. So, you know, just take a late flyer on those guys. And I did think it was interesting yesterday that Rich Hill and Juan Nicasio went back to back.
Yeah, I really wanted Juan Nicasio. Al took him, and I was a little disappointed. Maybe I should have pulled the trigger a little earlier. But Scott, I wanted to focus today on late round picks. We'll get to the news in a little bit, but there's really not anything groundbreaking today, at least as of, you know, 10 a.m. Eastern time. But who are some of your favorite late round picks? We're not just talking sleepers here, guys like Rich Hill that we've talked about, but even deeper than that, that you might take a shot on. In this draft, I know you took AJ Reed. That was one guy I wanted to talk about. But anyone else that you want to throw out there for our listeners?
Well, let's not play off Chris's point. Sorry, I'll just answer your question more directly, because there are some players, particularly in this format, that I'm always targeting late. I think home runs is a category where you can make up a lot of ground late. With guys like Mark Trumbo, who I feel like, you know, because he missed a little time last year with injury, he didn't have that 30 homer season we used to see from him, but he would have if he kept playing. He was on that kind of pace. He basically had a bounce back season. So I like him as a likely source of 30 homers late. Jonathan Scope up the middle, it's a second baseman or middle infielder. Good source of power there, likely.
You have to pick a new team now. That's two Orioles.
Well, what can I say? They have a lot of cheap power on that team.
Yeah, no, that's one guy, there's one thing they got, it's power.
One guy who went undrafted in this league, who I think is a good source of cheap power, is Justin Bour.
Oh, yeah, I almost took Justin Bour.
Yeah, he went completely undrafted. And, you know, looking at my team, that's one where it might have made sense for me to not draft, like, James Paxton. And instead grab Bour just as like that Byung Ho Park insurance.
Such a bore. It's such a bore.
Anything else, Scott?
A first baseman who can't hit lefties. What else is new? A couple pitchers. Jay Happ. I know we've talked about him a few times. I've come around to him as a sleeper. I think Victor Martinez, because of the hamstring injury, is starting to get overlooked again. He started to move up the rankings with the hot start to spring training, but then he has this little day-to-day injury and everybody's scared away again. So I got him in the reserve draft. Leonis Martin, I think, is a good cheap source of steals. Ben Paulson, in terms of upside, and kind of the Nick Hundley angle, where you get this guy playing regularly in Coors Field, good things can happen. I don't think Ben Paulson is especially talented, but if he hits 300 with 25 home runs, it would not be the shock of the century. You mentioned AJ Reed. I think he's probably the best hitter prospect to stash.
Yeah, he's probably going to start the year at AAA, right, AJ Reed?
Probably. It looks like Tyler White is in the driver's seat there for the first base job in Houston, but I don't really think he has big league caliber power for a first baseman. I see him as more of a kind of a bench, a high level bench bat.
Okay.
A little better than James Loney, maybe.
Okay.
And then just two more names, two guys who I happen to draft in this league that kind of goes with what Chris was saying in terms of just target the upside. Javier Baez and Jorge Soler for the Cubs. Two guys who, if they, you know, anybody gets injured in that lineup, they're suddenly playing every day and potentially delivering big power numbers.
I think
Chris is spot on with his suggestion for how to handle these bench spots, because unlike in a head-to-head league, you don't really need to take advantage of the two start weeks for pitcher. It might just hurt your ERA and WHIP if you do that. So you can really just use your bench spots for stashing upside players.
Now, just to recap those names and where they went in this 12-team roto draft: Mark Trumbo, round 20; Jonathan Scope, round 21; Justin Bour, undrafted; Jay Happ, round 20; Victor Martinez, round 23; Leonis Martin, round 25; Ben Paulson, round 26; AJ Reed, round 27; Javier Baez, round 24; and Jorge Soler, round 29. I also like Marcus Simeon. He went like round 22 or something. I took him.
Yeah, you totally sniped me on him.
It was a big theme for me last year, and I'm going to keep hitting it. I love guys that we were excited about last year that we're no longer excited about.
Yeah,
so I would throw in Byron Buxton, who went in the 19th round there. Like he had 138 bad plate appearances last season. That's not the end of his career.
Evan Gattis went pretty late. It's just tough with the DH-only guys, but Gattis made like 7 appearances in the outfield last year, so if he makes 5, he'll gain eligibility. Don't know if or when that will happen.
And I think there's a decent chance of it because the Astros have all these first basemen they're trying to fit in the lineup.
And Victor Martinez, you know, there is a chance Victor Martinez could play some first base if Miguel Cabrera plays some third base in these early interleague games. And, you know, we've talked about it. The Tigers, they have like 7 NL ballpark games in the first month and a half. So there's a chance that Miguel Cabrera is going to be third base eligible sometime in May. And I don't know, maybe less of a chance that Victor Martinez could be first base eligible.
Yeah, I'm not gonna buy the Victor Martinez bounce back. I can't bring myself to believe in that.
I mean, in round 23, I can.
Sure, if the price is that cheap, yeah. But my expectations are extremely low for a 37-year-old Victor Martinez.
Really good plate discipline. Clear excuse last year with the rushed return from knee surgery. I don't know. This is a guy we were excited about last year. Before that knee surgery came up, he was going in the second round.
37-year-olds usually get healthier as they age.
Oh, don't be such a Heath Cummings, Chris. You and Heath are such peas in a pod, the two of you.
I'm not saying he's never going to get injured again.
Oh, no.
But
he's
healthier now than he ever was last year.
I would say that even if he's healthy, I just don't.
Okay.
I just don't expect it.
It's like nobody paid attention to Alex Rodriguez last year. You know, I mean, like, this stuff happens. If guys stay healthy, they can hit well.
Or nobody paid attention to Victor Martinez 2 years ago, because we were writing him off then, too. He was coming off, I think, another knee issue in 2013.
He's never been that bad. He had a 667 OPS. That is disastrous.
But it was clear it was all from one side of the plate, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was all from the left side of the plate. He had like 1,000 OPS from the right side.
All right, guys. So some late round picks that I found interesting in this draft. I want you to tell me how excited you would be to have these guys on your team as late round picks. Drew Pomeranz now pitching for the San Diego Padres. Any excitement over Drew Pomeranz?
As a SPARP, absolutely. I mean, this was a guy I was targeting in all my head-to-head points leagues last year, and I think he has the inside track now because it's really just about beating out Brandon Morrow, who, of course, is never healthy, and I think Robbie Erlin, who is just bleh, made a good start. It was first spring start yesterday, and he pitched well. So there seems like he's moving up the depth chart.
All right, that's Drew Pomeranz. How about Minnesota starting pitcher Tyler Duffy?
Yeah, I kind of like him, too. I've begun to really like Jared Eichhoff, who made his first spring start for the Phillies Tuesday and struck out 7. And the reason I bring him up in relation to Duffy is they're both guys who but exceeded expectations by far down the stretch last year with impressive to the naked eye curveballs. And Eichhoff's especially is just really nasty. So I kind of like Eichhoff, Duffy too, for the same reason, but I prefer Eichhoff.
Next up, Chris, we'll go to you. Aaron Sanchez, much better as a reliever last year than a starter, but Aaron Sanchez, any excitement about him this year?
I guess he's someone that has the, what's that?
You really had to think about that, huh?
this is feigned excitement right here.
I can't say I thought too much about Aaron Sanchez. I mean, I guess if he's working in the rotation and they're trying to get him going, he's someone who has upside, but man, he was really bad last season when he got his chance in the rotation. The control was all over the place.
Does this change your opinion at all? And granted, it's 20 innings, spring innings. In those 20 innings, 19 strikeouts to only 3 walks.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, yeah. The sample size for him in the rotation last season wasn't much bigger. Yeah, it was
small. Yeah, it was more than 20 innings, but it was small.
Yeah, I don't even think, did he reach 50 innings as a starter last season? The numbers were exceptionally bad, and he hasn't shown the big strikeout rate in the majors yet. Even as a reliever, I'm pretty sure his strikeout numbers were okay. He had 19 strikeouts and 26 and a third. He had 66 innings, 42 strikeouts, 37 walks as a starter last season. He just hasn't shown it yet.
Aaron Sanchez as a reliever. That's what you were saying. He had, yeah, you're right. 19 strikeouts and 26 and a third.
Yeah,
he had better in the postseason, but
six and a half strikeouts per nine is, and then the postseason, you know, that's one round.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, obviously, we're talking about a late round pick, and
yeah,
you can waste late round picks left and right. Might as well go for the upside. And this is another head to head specific scenario, I think, since Sanchez is relief pitcher eligible. But I think there's enough hope of growth here that I think he's part of that late round spark discussion now.
There is almost no such thing as a bad late round pick.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow on the podcast, we'll talk about bounce back players. Who's going to bounce back this year? Towers kind of talked about it a little bit today. I'll throw Carlos Gomez at you and some other guys, and you'll tell me if you think they're going to have bounce back years. I think those are some of my favorite players to draft. They unnecessarily get dropped too low in the draft rankings, so we'll try to pick and choose who we like there.
You know who's not a bounce back player for me?
Victor Martinez?
Tulo.
Oh, no? How come?
I don't buy it. I don't believe in Tulo away from Coors. I don't believe in him staying healthy. We did our five players to avoid, and he was one of them. Sorry, Scott. I know you're the highest among our group on Tulo.
He was almost one of my five players to avoid. But
it's just like, if I got him in like the fifth round, I'd be okay with it. But third round, I just can't buy it.
Let's go to the news and notes. And tomorrow, Chris, I want you on the podcast again. If you have time, you can tell us more about players you like and you don't like.
All right.
Peter O'Brien hit a monster home run for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He crushed the ball. Chris, you love hard hit balls. Peter O'Brien for you.
That's what he does. Where is he going to play? That's the big question, right? Do we have a spot for him every day?
Not unless Yasmani Tomas falls flat on his face, and that hasn't happened this spring. He's been okay.
Yeah, I mean, we know he can hit the ball hard. We just don't know where he can play.
All right, how about, Michael Conforto left yesterday's game with back stiffness. I don't think that's really anything there. Alex Rodriguez is going to retire after 2017. Tyler Naquin, Cleveland Indians center fielder, homered twice. All right, so he did not get drafted in this draft, did he, Tyler Naquin?
No, and he shouldn't have. He shouldn't have. Even if he is like the clear center fielder, I don't think I'm drafting him in a mixed league. It's one of those guys, you look at his minor league stats, they're, you know, kind of interesting. You could see maybe there's some hope for him to be an impact major leaguer, but he doesn't stand out enough at any one thing to really make me think this is somebody to get excited about the very moment he steps on a big league diamond.
Okay.
I'm just hoping he accomplishes enough in his career that I could look at his name and not immediately think of NyQuil. That I could look at NyQuil and think, oh, it's like Tyler Naquin as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, the nice thing about Tyler Naquin is he played 322 games in the minors so far, which almost exactly splits up into two major league 162 game seasons. It's 161 games, and he's averaged 10 homers and 23 steals, hit .287. So it's hard to get super excited about him, but maybe if he's like an 8-homer, 20-steal guy and can manage to hit .280, like that's a fifth outfielder maybe?
Yeah, and obviously that home run rate was not in a major league number of at-bats based on a minor league season. A lot of times you see players with some, you know, glimmer of power in the minors become better power hitters in the majors, so I'm not saying he's nothing. I'm just saying there's no reason to give him any favoritism in a mixed league draft at this point.
Ervin Santana is going to be Minnesota's opening day starter. Santana was drafted in the 23rd round in our draft yesterday in a string of four straight starting pitchers coming off the board, and they were Ian Kennedy, Andrew Cashner, Ervin Santana, and Edinson Volquez. Ian Kennedy, Andrew Cashner, Ervin Santana, Edinson Volquez. Do any of those four really stand out as better value than the other three?
I would, I guess if I had to take any of them in the late rounds, I'd probably prefer Cashner just because there's some potential upside, which is a probably dumb thing to say about a 29-year-old.
But
I mean,
there's been flashes. Yeah, I actually like Ian Kennedy because the strikeout rate, even in his bad years, it's been pretty good.
And he's pitching for a team that tends to get the best out of their starting pitchers. But Cashner, he throws so hard. The strikeout rate started to show up last season for pretty much the first time, really. So, you know, he's someone that I could see putting up, like, you know, 190 strikeouts and 200 innings with a mid-3 ERA, and it wouldn't be that surprising.
Next note, Matt Wieters is going to DH today, but not ready to throw yet. Matt Wieters, he's got that elbow injury on the arm in which he had Tommy John surgery. Would you rather have Matt Wieters or JT Realmuto?
I rank Wieters ahead. I've never drafted Wieters, and I've drafted Realmuto a lot.
Right. Understood. Yeah. Sean Doolittle ready to return to spring training games, and Lance McCullers had a successful bullpen session. McCullers, I took in round 15. Oh, God, that was another one. I was so pissed at Sergio. He took Patrick Corbin one pick before I was about to take him. And I
said that's what he was when that draft was happening, I'm like, I bet Adam is cursing Sergio.
Right? I did. I IM'd him, and I was like, dude, is somebody telling you to mess with me today? Because that is the third time. I said, was it Heath? Is Heath telling you who to pick? And he's like, no, these are all mine.
Sounds like something Heath would do, though.
Yeah, it is, definitely. So McCullers, you know, encouraging bullpen session. And Scott, you and I are on the same page with McCullers. We don't mind him. Chris, how about you? Are you too worried about the shoulder, or are you good to go with McCullers?
Are they expecting him to pitch a full load of innings this season?
Well, now that he's injured, he doesn't have to.
Well, but was their plan to limit him this season, or were they going to let him go if he was healthy?
I think there was a loose plan to limit him.
Okay. So the shoulder injury maybe doesn't change your opinion of him that much, assuming if you believe that he can stay healthy throughout the season. I think it does certainly discount him because it's at the start of the season and there's no guarantee that he makes it through the season healthy. This makes him more risky. But the upside he showed last season, he came a little bit out of nowhere. He was like a fringy top 100 prospect guy, but he was really impressive last year. So, I think in the 15th round, that's really good value.
Cool. Lance McCullers. All right, let's do some emails here. This one is from... Who are you? Oh, you didn't give a name, so we'll call you Michael. And he says, Dear Ben, Matthew, and Rory... And these are movie characters from a terrible movie.
I was thinking Gilmore Girls with the Rory, but that's the only...
that's the only Rory I know, too.
No, I've never seen Gilmore Girls, but I'd rather watch it than Dazed and Confused.
You've never seen Gilmore Girls?
Come on. Chris, I'm not a high school girl. I've never seen the Gilmore Girls.
They talk so fast, but they talk so true.
But I have seen, unfortunately, a lot of Vanderpump Rules because I have a fiancé.
I've never heard of that.
That's the same reason I've seen a lot of Gilmore Girls.
That's fair enough. I won't criticize you for it. Vanderpump Rules is a reality TV show of
epic. It's about a restaurant.
It's about a bunch of models and like wannabe models who work at a restaurant and sleep with each other and fight all the time, and it's crazy. Anyway, here's a shortstop idea from unnamed man who I actually was trying to do this yesterday, but it didn't quite work out. What if you focus on other positions at the beginning of the draft, ignore shortstop if it falls that way, then grab Jose Reyes and Trevor Story with two very late picks? What do you think of that idea?
I don't think it's a bad idea. Like I said, I don't think it makes as much sense to do that as shortstop as like at second base. And I guess what I'd worry about is just that Trevor Story isn't that good. And Jose Reyes never really comes back, at least not in a meaningful role. So that would, I don't think it's a can't miss situation. Trevor Story does not have good plate discipline. He obviously has some power and, you know, playing half his games at Coors Field is probably the reason we're even talking about him. Mm-hmm. That could make him good. But I just don't think he's like a Corey Seager level can't miss shortstop prospect where, all your problems are solved if you decide to go this route.
Yeah, and Trevor Story went in the 17th round. Reyes went in the 19th round.
And the one thing I was looking at to potentially poke some holes in that would be, you know, which shortstops went around them or after them. And it's Asdrubal Cabrera in the 18th, and I don't think there was another shortstop drafted until Eugenio Suarez in the 21st.
Yeah, but I don't think Suarez is that different. He's another bad plate discipline shortstop with good power.
I don't mind
Suarez, yeah.
Okay, anyway, next email is from Garrett from Austin, Texas. Just curious why Chris Colabello is so overlooked at first base. Don't hear much about Chris Colabello. Why is he so overlooked, guys?
It's totally in Chris's wheelhouse.
I want to look up the numbers, but from what I remember, he had an extremely fluky 2015 season, and that's something that the Blue Jays can do. They can get sustainably fluky performance out of guys that you don't think are all that talented, but 411 BABIP,
there you go.
Not sustainable for anybody. you know, he didn't hit that many fly balls, but he had 26.9% fly ball ratio, is really low. 23.4 home run to fly ball rate with a pretty low hard hit average, which says to me that he doesn't have the kind of raw power to sustain that home run to fly ball ratio. Now, playing at the Rogers Center can you cheat that up a little bit, but I would be stunned if he is 80% as productive as he was last season.
That said, in the spirit of there's no such thing as a bad late round pick, if I am hurting in batting average late, I might throw a pick Colabello's way just in case.
Next email is from JJ Yarbrough from Indianapolis. He says, "Hey, puppy, monkey, and baby." This appears to be a Mountain Dew reference.
Yeah, that weird Mountain Dew commercial.
I never even saw it. But Scott, you were named.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I didn't. I don't pay attention to the commercials really. Scott, yesterday we had a fill in the blank that made us name soft drinks to correspond with all of us.
Oh,
and you, Al, said you were a Mountain Dew.
I am a Mountain Dew. I turn to the Mountain Dew on occasion here at work when I need to concentrate on writing something long and monotonous. And so maybe that's where that comes from. I don't know that I self-identify with Mountain Dew because I don't think I'm high energy enough.
Well, after he said that, I said, "Mountain Dew, ugh, I'll take a crab juice." And it didn't really hit. But I feel like both of you guys get that reference.
I do not get that reference.
Neither do I, sorry.
Dude, that's the Simpsons.
That's what I figured. I just you know, didn't quite pick up on that specific one. Sorry, Adam. I'll let you down.
How late into The Simpsons was this reference?
It's like season 9 or 10. He goes to New York City
because
his car got towed, and then Homer has to get a drink, and the guy says, "Only Mountain Dew and crab juice." And he goes, "Ugh, I'll take a crab juice." Anyway, the question is, last question here, we'll finish on this. My league just expanded from saves to saves plus holds. It's an 11-team roto keeper league. I'm trying to figure out which relievers to roster. We already drafted. I have 4 relievers. There are only 5 active pitching slots, so I must be selective. So can you rank these relievers and which you think would be most valuable in a saves plus holds league? Kevin Jepsen, Koji Uehara, Hunter Strickland, Luke Gregerson, Joaquin Benoit, Keone Kella, Ryan Madsen.
Who are your favorites? All holds guys, presumably.
Yeah.
I would probably rank them in the order of how likely they are to get saves, because the rate at which a closer accumulates saves is much higher than the rate at which a setup man accumulates holds. So I'd actually go Jepsen first, because I worry about Glenn Perkins' back neck situation, and then probably Gregerson after that. No, actually, I'd even go Benoit ahead of Gregerson because Caps is terrible.
I was actually thinking of just ranking them by who is the best pitcher among them, just because holds can be random. Injuries to the closer ahead of them can be random. Perkins' situation is a little different because that's a chronic situation. So I think I might go Uehara highest, just because holds, they're going to come if you're a setup man. They're pretty random, but you'll get them, and I think he just might be the best pitcher among that group.
By the way, you said Caps is horrible. You meant Cishek, and I did draft Joaquin Benoit in the late rounds because I drafted Steve Cishek. yesterday. So, there you go.
Yeah. I did I did the Jason Grilli Arodis Vizcaino pairing. So
there you go.
I hear you.
And the good thing is it's very, very unlikely that anybody else is going to take your closer handcuff. So you can wait pretty late on those guys, but not too late. That's it for today's show. Late round picks, Roto recap, good stuff. Chris Tower, Scott White. Thank you guys. Chris, it was great to have you on.
Nice to be back.
And
I'll
tomorrow.
See you guys again later.
Quiet. I'm trying to end the show. Tomorrow, Chris Towers again with somebody else or maybe two other people. We'll talk bounce back candidates on Fantasy Baseball.